So welcome everybody to our Practice Accelerator training call. We have four of these a year, and this is our first or second one for this year, but whatever, I don't remember what, but I know that this is where I get to share whatever you guys need to learn. We have a library of them, and Rose, if you haven't really already looked at them, there's a whole library of it, and I can show you where to find it, but it's recently been moved to the new site. So the last few years of those calls are up there, so you can look and go, oh, I want to learn this. Some of them are just, they don't have like a topic listed on them for whatever reason when they post to them. I'm going to have to fix that, but you'll be able to tell, you know, where you want to begin with the flow of, you know, this whole concept of working remotely with people and doing programs and stuff like that. So I know that, you know, we're all at different places, and the importance of email in the follow-ups is important, whether you're doing a group program, whether you're offering a webinar, whether you're offering a group program, whether you're doing something like what you're going to do, Rose, which is offering the blood chemistry, right? Analysis is a way that you talk to people in order to help them to go, oh, I want that. I want what she's having. Let's see what she's getting. And it's really important when you send emails to people that you start with something good that they want, like information that they want, tips that they want, whatever that's related to what you're going to offer them later. So if, let's say, for example, Rose, if you're going to offer a blood chemistry analysis to patients that are already, you know, in your community here, you would write to them and you would say, hey, did you know that? Did you know that the typical blood chemistry, you know, when they tell you you're fine, is not fine? Did you know that there's certain nutritional things that you can find out about in your blood chemistry that most regular doctors, Western doctors, don't even know that are there? And here's one or two, and you, you know, tell them about something in there. And they say, To go deeper with this, I'm going to do a little training on this on Zoom next week. Would you like to join me? And on that, I'm going to teach you blah, 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 right? And they get like, oh, that sounds good. And then they come and they join you. Your first couple of webinars, how many people are going to show up? I don't know. It depends on how many people you have on your list, but they're not used to it. You may get a few people. But as we look at growing, you know, strategies to grow that following, it's going to be more and more. So I know one of my mentors was Bill Barron, and Bill Barron, very successful, highly successful business right now. He said his first webinar, he made sure to invite his mother and his sister that so that there would be somebody there. He did. And he had three people on his list. Now he does a webinar, you know, he'll have thousands and thousands of people show up. So it's not to be discouraged if, and with Zoom, you just click the record button. And even for the people that don't show up, you follow up with, hey, here's the recording of the training I just did, right? So you, and you build a library, basically. I mean, you've seen, I've done gazillions of these, right? I've done thousands of them probably. And it's a library of resources that I could go back to and share with people in many different ways. So the importance of email communication is to get them interested first. Like, so you have to start with a really good subject line that's going to catch their attention to make them open, because there's a lot of noise in everybody's inbox, wouldn't you say? There's just a lot of stuff that comes through. And if you don't see something that, you know, say something that's going to get their attention, if you just say, you want to learn about, you know, you want to learn about health, that's going to get lost, right? But the top three missing things that are destroying your health, that could get attention, right? Or the things that you think are healthy that aren't, are you doing any of these things, right? The top three solutions to menopause symptoms that I've found, right? That's, you catch their attention, right? So it's like, do you want to get your blood tested? No. Right? Do you want to poop in a cup and get a stool test done?
Oh, yeah. No.
Right? That's attention grabbing. Maybe the headline would be how pooping in a cup can change your health. Maybe that would be a good, you know what I mean? Like, you think about what you're telling them to do. you know, the pooping in a cup when you're first introducing somebody to health and you're going to do a stool test. It's a little, you know, anyway, the benefits of pooping in a cup that might get some people to open it. Right. And I'm just making these up as I go along. I have no idea if these would be good ones. So you start with what is that attention grabbing headline, right? And usually I write my headline or my subject line after I've written everything else, because then I've got the content and I go, oh, there's a little piece. There's a nugget that's going to get their attention. One of my most opened emails was something about how I'm still shocked at what my son did today, you know? And it was like, oh, what was that? He ate pizza at school, you know? So anyway, but that was it back in the day, like 4 or 5 years, 10 years ago. He's 22 now. Yeah, it was about 10 years ago. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting there. Anyway, so you want to start there. So once you do that, you want to get them to keep reading. So the next step is, what's that attention grabbing first paragraph going to be? And I just learned this recently if you make it a question and you make the first like three sentences in your email short and you have them on one line, it gets people's attention. If you start with a paragraph that's this long with not a lot of spaces in it, they go, I'm tired. It's the end of the day. I don't have time to read this. But you just give them short, pithy sentences, right? Mahala just came on. Hi. So it could be something like how taking Tylenol can mess up your stomach, because people know about that. So like, what's something else that taking Tylenol can do? Can actually make your inflammation worse. You know, that, right? That could be the first sentence that you say. Did you know that taking Tylenol can actually make your inflammation worse? I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think it is, because it turns off the fatty acid pathways. So, you know, something like that. Did you know that when you take Tylenol to help your joint pain, it actually can make your inflammation worse? And that's going to get people to read further, right? Because, yeah. So we figure out what that is. So we want to get their attention right there at the beginning of the email. But keep this in mind when you're writing an email. If you're offering something, a webinar, a free download, a book, or come and talk to me in my office, whatever it might be, you want to get a click. So you want the email to get them to click. So how do you get them to click? If you're sending them to a page that has a registration form on it, and you'll learn more about that later, Rose, but if you send them to a page that has a registration form on it and has bullets about all the, you know, information about what you're going to talk about, if you just say all that stuff in the email, you may not get them to like the pretty page that shows it, right? Reading something in an email, I believe, is very different than reading it on a page that looks nice. It kind of grabs their attention. Emails are hard to read. You got hundreds of them in your box and you're trying to sort through it and the type is small, whereas on a page, you can make it look pretty. You can make the type big. You can make it stand out. So the idea is to get them to click to this page and then take action, right? And the more you train them to click, the more it's going to be advantageous to you when you have something to sell, then they're going to get to this sales page, right? So that's the idea. So get their attention with a subject. The shorter, the better that gets attention, and the less descriptive, the more intriguing and like, wow, what is that? What could that be? I mean, so many people have got me to open with these little short things that have nothing to do with their email. I don't recommend that you have it be something that's nothing to do with what's inside. I recommend that you be in integrity and keep it according to what's inside, but you can take a little short piece of what's inside like and get the shock value. And then they get it. And the first sentence, first paragraph, first few sentences, whatever, need to keep their attention. Like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And they're leaning in because they want more. And once you get their attention, if I'm sending them somewhere to register or sending them to an appointment link to register for an appointment, or if I'm sending them to a sales page, I want to put multiple links there because people's attention span is how big? Like that big, right? And I've made the mistake of having this long, beautiful email with all this great information. And nobody ever clicks because they never make it to the end because they get distracted. They go, oh, I don't have time to read this. I'm going to save this for later. So it's finding a balance with your own audience as to long versus short. And I always put, even if I've still got a lot more to say, if I've said enough, some people are quick action takers. So they're going to see enough and they go, oh, what is this? Let me click it. Whereas if the link is all the way at the bottom, you lost them because they're never going to see it. So you have a link very close to the top after you've given them enough information. And then you have more information for the people who need more before they click. And then maybe three or four different times you give them the opportunity to click and you add information to it. So I learned this from a very, very smart marketer not that long ago, a couple of years ago. He said, there's four different types of personality types of people who might be interested in what you're doing. And Allison, shake your head because you've seen this, right? So there's the person who just is like, they just go, what is it? Oh my God, that sounds good. I'm going to click it. They don't have time for the rest of it. If you make that person wait, you lost them, right? Annette is one of those people. She'll say, I'm not going to read through all the way. If it sounds good, click. If it doesn't, and I keep going, you know, maybe I'll find out more. But then there's the people who want to know, why is this important? Why is this something that's important? And so you give them some of the why, and then you have another button to click. And then after that, the people want to know who else is doing this. Who are your testimonials? Who have you helped? And they read that, and then they're ready to click. And then there's the other people who want to read, the people that when they go to the office to sign mortgage papers or whatever are reading every line. And if you're that type, you're not going to click to see anything more until you get to that point where you get all the details, right? So we do this on sales pages, and I'll talk about that in another time, or we could just touch on that briefly. You can do that on sales pages where you set it up and then, you know, you get people, and finally this last person, they want to know how many videos, how many audios, are there transcripts, you know, how many calls, they want to know everything, right? And we've had people like that where I work with NEPT. They'll get on a call and they'll say, oh yeah, that sounds really good. And they just, okay, great, I'm ready. And then there's other people who three or four, you know, calls later, because they're like, I still want to know this. I read this and they read the whole thing and they've highlighted it. They're not as common, but they're there, right? And we got to honor that when we're talking to people. If you're offering like a $300 blood chemistry analysis, right? It's not a huge investment. So they may or may not read all that, but they want to know, like, what are you going to give me? And how's this going to go? And are we going to be on Zoom? Or are we going to be in person? Are we going to be on the phone? And what's the report look like? You know, they're going to ask you lots of questions. So I kind of try to circumvent that by putting different sections. So you can do that in an email. So you can just still do a longer email as long as you have multiple calls to action. We call that a call to action, which is click here to find out more, click here to register. So those are important things. And you can do the same thing in a sales page. You can do it on an opt-in, but you make sure that very close to the top is where they can take action and they can get the more information, right? That person who clicks on the first link in your email is likely going to go to the page. They're going to read a couple of sentences and they're going to click and they're going to register. The second person is going to go further. The third, you know what I'm saying? So it's very similar the way that people's, this is a personality type. So when you send out an email to offer something, those are the steps to do. And again, it doesn't matter, even if it's just click to my blog, because you're getting them to click. And that's a good way before you even have a huge, you know, an offering and products to sell, get them used to clicking, right? So you write to your patients, they're not used to that. They're used to coming into the office and seeing you in person, right? So they're going to see this link. And so do you have a blog? So one of the things that we can talk about you doing when we do our business analysis thing is how to set up a blog. And it doesn't have to be huge, long blog posts. It can be just short, like here's the top five tips for, right? Here's the five reasons why you want to do or thermography versus mammogram, right? So whatever that might be, here's the reasons that you can't trust the annual blood chemistry report that says everything's fine because they're not looking at this. So you create these things. They don't have to be long. They can be if you like to write. So you write these things and you teach your audience to click. You know, Mihaela, you have a blog. So I don't know how active it is what you are with that, because we all get overwhelmed thinking we have to write these little short novels in order to write a good blog post. And you don't. People don't want to read long ones. Like there was a while there where everybody's saying, yo, yeah, you have to have at least 1,000 words in your blog. First it was don't have more than 300. Then it was, oh, it has to be at least 1,000 or 1,500 because people want the information. People don't have time, right? They don't have time. So even if you send them to a blog that's your top five tips for this or 10 ways to do that or 3 ways to do that, and it's short and sweet, you can get people to click, and that teaches them to click in your emails. And if they get there and they get good value, then the next time, and then when you say, hey, I'm offering a webinar next week, they've learned that they're going to click and they're going to get some more information. And then when you're offering a product, it's even better because you're offering something for sale. You can send them to your sales page. Okay. So I'm going to stop there and then see what questions you might have. And then I have a few other things I want to make sure you're clear about the different kinds of email communication that you'll have with people. So questions, comments, anything? Allie's probably too tired to even think of questions at this point. What is it, midnight?
Yeah, it started at midnight, so it's 1:30 now. One question that springs to mind when we're comparing it to a sales page where you're handling to each of the four personality styles for the pearls or the yellows, who are the nurturing people, you're putting the testimonials in. You don't need to put a testimonial into every email, do you?
No, I wouldn't. You could say, like, you know, people who have done this before have said, you do in some, if you're doing a sales sequence, like you do your webinar, you offer your program, and then you're going to do a series of emails to send them to the sales page. That's a place where you do. And sometimes as a PS and sometimes in the body of it. But if you do it all the time, people, you know, you can't do anything all the time because people get like a little, you know, you got to keep them guessing, like, oh, what is she writing me this time? You want them to be excited to open up the email. Yeah,
that's a good point, because I tend to put a testimonial in the PS of all of my emails, and maybe I should actually mix it up a bit more.
Yeah, mix it up a bit more. Make the PS instead of a testimonial, because they're not going to be used to reading, because you want them to read the PS, because when you're doing like a sales offer webinar, you know, or to a sales page, you want the PS to be, oh, by the way, this ends at midnight Monday. Oh, by the way, you know, here's the extra bonus you're going to get if you sign up right away. Because sometimes people skip to the PS. And if the PS isn't of value to them, they're going to learn not to do that. Not to say that testimonials aren't of value, but that always feels like if it's always a testimonial, here, she's trying to sell me something again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm going to send Rose, and I don't know if Mihaela, if you have it, but the four personality types. I think I have, I'll put it in your, you don't? Mm-hmm. I know Allie does, right? Yeah. Okay. I'll make sure I put those into your yeah. I think I'm going to put a lot of the stuff that's templated that into a template folder. So you can guys just go into the templates and pull what you want. I'll make them so that they're copy only. So that you have to make a copy, because I don't want you making edits in my templates, because I've had that happen before and it's a mess. Okay. I'm going to say templates. Okay. Any other questions on this so far? Yeah. Okay. No. All right. So before we go on,
I do have a question.
Yeah.
So like if I, you know, one big thing that you just said about the blogs. So I my blogs were more like, oh, this medication, but I think it's probably better if I talk about like 5 top tips if you do take this drug, or 10 reasons not to take this drug, or totally. Things like that.
Right. If you already have them written, okay. Right. You can easily go in and edit them.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then like I was just trying here to come up with a title. So I was just thinking, would it be better if I use a specific drug name or a class the name of a class?
That's a good question.
Of drugs. I mean, people are.
But people, do people know the class? People know about anti-NSAIDs or anti-inflammatories, or, you know, they may know about pain relievers or.
I was thinking like about proton pump inhibitors, but I don't think people know what that
no,
is.
No, no, no. You have so to talk to the eighth grade level.
Proton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You'd so say ulcer medication.
So whoever.
Antacids, not proton. Ulcer. Antacids, right? There's a bunch of them, and they're, you know, mostly those are, or at least the proton pump inhibitors are. Okay. That's, you have to speak in their terms. Remember that we have a much higher level of education than a lot of the people, you know, especially on the medical side. Maybe they have a PhD in physics, but they don't have anything to do with medicine, right? So we have to talk in their language. You can always explain it in the article, blah, blah, blah. And this is a class of called the proton pump inhibitors, because a lot of the people really want to know that stuff. I know my audience, they want to know. They may not know, but they love it when you teach them those details, right? And this class of drugs is used for, guess what? Acid reflux or ulcers or gastritis. And here's the downsides of them. Here's the positive. Here's the downsides of them, right? Here's when you should use them, and here's when you should question the use of them. You may not want to ever say when you shouldn't use this drug, but maybe question the use of this drug, right? Because otherwise they'll go, I read it on a blog that I shouldn't use this. And like, then they come after you, the crazy, hungry people who are trying to sue people to, you know, out of their businesses. So that's what I would recommend. Yeah. And you have, if you have a bunch of blogs, and I know, Ali, you have tons of them, you can just start sending your list to those blogs. If you haven't done that, I know you send them people on Facebook, but just go and say, what ones, like what theme do I want to, you know, be talking about now? What blog posts do I already have? And then you send them there, right? Rose, do you have handouts that you use with your patients?
Sometimes, but not a lot. It hasn't been a tool that I've used a lot.
Okay, so when you fill out that questionnaire, that business questionnaire, just brainstorm all the things you already have, because that's stuff that we can use as components for a program, but also components for the little freebie things that you're going to use to build your list.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Why reinvent the wheel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a question around that. So I've got about 400 blog posts. Edit them and make them longer, because they are, it's better search engine optimization nowadays to be over 1,000 and they're about 400, but they need editing anyway to make them improved, and republish them under a new date. Is that okay?
Do new date, new name, as long as you're adding more content to it and you're changing at least 15-20% of it, you're good. Yeah, not changing it, adding it would count as changing.
Yeah, the difference would be if there's a lot of traffic to it already, but I doubt it very much with my posts, because I haven't.
If there's traffic to it already, that's why you want to leave it intact. Then you want to take it and make a different name, and you can rearrange paragraphs, you can add to it, you can subtract from it. And you know, it's interesting, because the SEO thing is they like it better when it's longer, but people don't read them when they're longer, quite frankly, right? So it's like, It's kind of crazy that you have to do something to appeal to. When you write a long blog post or an article or an email, you just don't want any more than 3 to 4 lines in a paragraph before the white space, because that overwhelms, especially someone who's got vision issues, right? Where they're not that clear, or they have, you know, the over 40 presbyopia type of situation. It starts to just, it feels overwhelming. It feels overwhelming.
Another option, of course, is to post a version of it on Medium.
Yeah. And Medium doesn't care if it was published somewhere else.
Oh, does it not? Oh, that's cool.
That's what I've heard. Now, don't take it for a word, but Medium is a great opportunity to post stuff. I've never posted there. I haven't written anything in a while, you know, as far as blog posts. So, and I want to get back into it. It's just, you know, there's just so many hours in a day, and most of them are used up. What's that?
You just get your staff to adapt transcripts of your amazing videos.
I know. I keep thinking I should hire somebody who's a really good, like, repurposing writer type, can take it. And I tried that once years ago, and the stuff she came out with was, it wasn't very good. So I didn't use it.
It's difficult when you know what's good and they don't, isn't it?
I know.
Social media outsourcing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. They picked the wrong. Yeah. They don't have a sense of what's important. And you do. And so they're like, why did you pull that out of there? That wasn't important. This was, right? So it's hard. It's hard if you don't want to monitor them carefully, it's hard, right? If I had the time to monitor them carefully, I might as well write it myself. Okay. Right. So it's all finding out what you do best. I do really well with spontaneous extemporaneous audio or video, right? And then if we get that transcribed, we can then, you know, tweak it and make it into a blog post. But we're working on that. There's all kinds of ways you can do it. And what you have to do is determine what's going on. He's taking our picture. smile, girls. You have to determine what's the highest and best use of your time. And that's what I'll help you with, right? Is what's the highest and best use? I want to create a weekly Facebook Live, repurpose it so I have audio for it that I can put on a podcast. I want to repurpose that onto YouTube. I want to have the transcribed. And then it's like, okay, what's the highest best use of my time to do that, right? And yeah, eventually you get somebody that can do it for you. And I still need to look into that, but we were doing that and we weren't getting the clicks and the traffic that we thought we should. And it's like, well, is it worth it to have like 5 people watch the YouTube video? I don't think so. You know what I mean? So we figure that out. And you know, figuring out the subject lines, like handing it off to somebody to do, they don't have the knowledge base, you know, unless you find somebody really high level and then they charge you a fortune, to know what the best SEO-able subject line is going to be or what can get some viral traffic, right? So, yeah.
I used to do article marketing years ago, there was one article marketing website that could adjust each paragraph to make it slightly different. So you could have you could have 12 different versions of the same article. I was just wondering if you knew of any software that's available online at the moment that does that. It was brilliant. It costs something, whereas eZine articles never cost, but still it was so worth it.
Was it eZine, was that where it was?
eZine articles was free. There was a paid one that had this software in it. Brilliant.
Interesting.
I'll look it up for it again.
Yeah. So sometimes it's simple to repurpose, right? You come up with a new name, you twist the paragraphs around, start out with a new and really thinking about a hot new opening, right? What's going to get their attention and grab them? And maybe some of it, you know, we're all techie left brain people, right? We really have a high education and we're left brain, but we need to really sit with it and say, okay, maybe they're not going to think like, hey, did you know that proton pump inhibitors, blah, blah, blah. And maybe they don't care about proton pump inhibitors, right? We got to hit them where it is. You know, your stomach pain may actually be worsened by the drugs you're taking to help you get rid of your stomach pain, right? Real simple. And I think if you look at your articles that you've written and just think in terms of how can I create a new intro that's going to grab the attention of those people out there that are not, you know, high level medically educated, right? That are going to hit their pain points, right? And then it's going to go, oh, I didn't know that. Wow, I can't believe I'm doing that. Why did my doctor tell me to do that, right? Yeah. So that's really important. And you can do this. You can just do this with all of those blog posts that you have and just pick one a week. Don't overtax yourself. Just pick one a week that you're going to take an old blog post. You're going to, you know, retitle it, rearrange it and repost it, republish it. Right? Don't take an old one that you've already published and then just edit it or delete it and make a new one. Like don't just, yeah, because if it's already got unless it has no traction. But if it's already got some good traction, leave it out there to do work for you. Just make it a different version of it.
What I've been doing is editing it and changing it and republishing it with a new date. So maybe I'll stop doing that because I only thought while we were on the call, oh golly, I might already be getting traffic to that post.
Right. Nah. Right. And if you are, and the more, you know, a lot of the Google stuff, the search engine stuff is based on your volume of stuff. Yeah. The other thing, I mean, while we're talking about blogs, we're off track, but that's okay. When you're in a blog, the Google search engines. I don't know exactly anymore what they look for, but backlinks is what they like. You know, so if you have multiple articles and you backlink to previous ones, you get extra credit for that. If you link to an authority site, something that they consider an authority site, like MindBodyGreen or whatever else might be out there, right? Or somebody that they you get more credit for that. If they link to you, that's even better. But that's where you know, that's another whole story altogether. Does that make sense? Links in your article. And I got lazy with my last bunch of articles and I had people helping me do them. So it was like, do I have to teach them about this and know what to link to? And, you know, it can get cumbersome. But if you just do that and you think about that, when I used to write a blog post, it would take me a couple hours because I was thinking about my links and where I was going to go to. And I got really good SEO traction organically a long time ago, but my recent ones don't. And I think it's because we didn't do all that.
And I never put Google Analytics in, so I don't know what my traction is.
Well, I used to use something where it ranked you. Alexa. I don't remember. Yeah. There was a thing that you put in it. You could see your ranking when you logged into your blog, and the top blogs, whatever they are, have a 1, 2, 3, 5. And if you were in the first 100,000, you were considered like amazing, right? Because there are millions. When you first put up a new blog, it's ranked in the 5 million or whatever it is. And the more articles you put there and the more they get traction, I had gotten up to 200,000 and I was thrilled. And I just, for whatever reason, other things got in the way and I wasn't able to continue to do it. So I have no idea where my blog ranks anymore. Probably, you know, way down there again.
Yeah. It looks like it was alexa.com.
Alexa. First, I thought, well, am I saying,
the same as the Amazon thing, but yeah.
Alexa.com. Yeah, I used to look at that. So I have to look at that again and see where my blog is. Unless I just don't want to be depressed, I won't look at it.
I also paid for yet another program, typical me, that was about writing articles, and you can write for MindBodyGreen. So you could write articles in MindBodyGreen and link back to some of your other blog posts in your own website.
There you go. That's an awesome way to do it, right? The authority site linking back to you, right? So for Rose, looking at who's talking about thermography, right? For you, it's like, you know, if that's where that's what you're known for, right? Is how do you write articles related to that and then find where people are posting them and link to their stuff and, you know, kind of reach out to them and get them to link to you, right?
Yeah. And something else, one of my other mentors suggested is that if you're in a similar niche, we should link to each other's blogs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you guys are in a good, you know, like you're doing menopause from a perspective of, you know, balancing your, you're like people in menopause need to have thermography, right? So those would be good articles that you could cross promote for each other, right? Yeah. Mihaela, you fit with almost all of us, right? Because we're all worried about all the drugs that people are on, right? So it's really easy for me to refer people to you and send them over to your posts. So if you start doing that, that would help me. If I want to send out a weekly, you know, weekly article or a couple of times a week, an article to my list, I would love to send it to this thing about medications, because my list will eat it all up. You know, you've talked to them already. Yeah. They will eat it all up because they are like so scared of medications. And when they have the actual stuff, like I was on a call just before and somebody's doctor put her on synthetic progesterone for fibroids. Right. And she said, oh, I'm on progesterone. I said, oh, tell me what's the name of it? Something ins, right? So progestins, right? So I don't remember the exact label name for it. I'm like, well, maybe you could talk to your doctor about switching you to a bioidentical form, because she needed the progesterone. She clearly needed it from her Dutch results, where all her metabolites were really bad. And she has fibroids and she's bleeding, right? And they need to stop the bleeding. So now, oh, they just tripled her dose on it. Right? So it's not providing you the protection that progesterone will against those estrogens, and it could be making it worse, you know? So anyway, it's that kind of stuff that people don't know. And she's very well educated. So I didn't know she didn't know that. So we can't take it for granted that they know. No, don't ever take synthetic progestins. you know, that's not good for you. She didn't know. So there's a lot of folks like that. That might be a really good article for you to do, mm-hmm. right? And that would be a good article for then Allie to lead to, which promotes her to, you know, doing the natural approach, right?
It's probably medroxyprogesterone acetate, dreadful stuff.
Yeah, it might have been whatever it was. I know it was a synthetic, and I don't know all the different ones. I don't know all the, you know, the details of the different ones. I just know the research behind, you know, synthetic progesterones is really bad, right? Yeah. So you have a lot of options, and you don't have to specialize necessarily in your blog. What you could do with the blog is actually create different, you just create different articles on different topics, and you watch to see what the response is, right? Which ones are getting the most hits, and that would point you in a direction. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. In your emails to your list, would you mention a blog maybe once a week?
That's what I want to do. I just don't have any new ones. I mean, I have 800 blog posts, so I can easily go in and do the repurpose thing. But I haven't been because, you know, I have a team. I need a team that's this big, and I have a team that's this big. And, you know, the more people you have, like the people who do a lot of that, like Josh Axe, for example, you know, probably spends a couple of $1 million a year on marketing and team, right? I don't have a couple of $1 million a year to spend on that, right? So I can't do it. And so you basically, you have to do what you can do, but that's my goal, you know, by middle end of the year, is to be very consistent, have my podcast, send an email out once a week that a new podcast is being released, and really use the email to like get them excited about the topic and then click to the topic. And then I would like to do that same with the blog posts, because I have a lot of good blog posts out there that can be repurposed and redone. I even created, this is a good recommendation. I know we're getting off topic here, but again, is to create a Google Sheet that has, actually mine has multiple tabs, and I have the different categories of my blog posts. So some of them have a video in them. Some of them are from my radio show when I did that. Some of them are practitioner related. Some of them are consumer articles. Some of them are recipes. So there's like 5-6 different categories. And what I did was I had somebody I paid in the Philippines, you know, she was good enough to do that. And it was inexpensive to do. And she basically went to my blog and pulled out and put the names and the tags I used. And there's all this information about that blog post. So if I want to go back and see what ones did I do that were articles? What ones did I do that were recipes? I mean, I could go further with the articles and say, hormone articles, digestion articles, you know, whatever. But, you know, we haven't gotten that far yet. But my goal with that was to be able to pull from there and create social media posts that would say, oh, this, you know, right now I'm working on, I want to talk about blood sugar because I'm going to be promoting my blood sugar program in a few weeks. So what articles do I have? And then be able to send people on social media and from my list to read these articles to just get them warmed up. So that's the ideal, you know, marketing, full marketing plan.
That's right? A really good idea. My VA is actually a trained nurse, my Filipino VA. So ooh, she would be brilliant at that.
Yeah. And you've got like 400 of them. It'd probably take her less than a day to do it, you know, a few hours to do it. And then you have this nice resource. And if you have different topic categories that you've been doing, then you might want to put a separate tab for each of those so that it's easy for you to go in. You don't have to read through a whole slew of these. You just have to read through, you know, a dozen or a couple of dozen, right?
I've also started putting a Canva graphic at the bottom of my blog post when I'm going back and editing them, with a link to one of my lead magnets, which I never did until now, because I've really got all the lead magnets set up over the last year. So that's another thing to think about.
That is. And a guy took a class from a few years ago on Facebook ads, and he was talking about blog posts and how you can link them up to Facebook ads and stuff. But he basically said, if you have a lead magnet, definitely put it at the end, put it somewhere in the middle, and put it in within the first couple of paragraphs. And they're just not going to be big, like a picture of it. It's just going to be, and in my book about blah, 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 and that's a hyperlink. Right. And people naturally click those. A lot of people do, people don't know. And then they end up doing that. And then that, when they click that, you can actually make it a pop-up. There's a software, Pop-Up Ally. It's like $79 or something. And you basically get this software that you put and it just pops it up. You know, the pop-ups, the annoying ones, but this isn't like annoying when it you just show up and you can't get rid of it. It's after they've clicked this link, it pops up for them.
And it was interesting seeing you had a pop-up on your squeeze page for the webinar that I was analyzing, the one from March on the biochemistry.
Yeah.
You had a pop-up on that.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, the pop-up, all my opt-in pages, I have pop-ups.
Yeah.
I use that in ClickFunnels because they found that it's quicker. So the difference between when we say a pop-up is that if you go to a page and it says sign up for this, and then there's a box that says name, email address, and then you click submit, that's just right. You know, that's the normal way to do it. But they found that it's much better conversion if they have to click the button. It says click here to download. They click it, it pops up, they fill it in, and then they go. For whatever reason, even though it's like a separate extra step for people, it seems to more people sign up. You get more people. And it might be different for every person and every audience, but that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Any other questions before? Any specific questions about emails? Because I have a few more points I wanted to cover. So there's different kinds of emails you're going to send your list. So I would recommend that you figure out which, you know, what's your pattern? How comfortable you feel with how many times a week do you feel sending people emails? You know, at least once a week you should, but I think twice a week or three times a week is not too much as long as it's not always promotional, right? So the rule of thumb is like 7 or 8 content type things. And content would mean clicking to a blog to read a blog or information in there. Even I think so, offering a free webinar, a free video can be considered content. Like we're doing a free video series next, starting Sunday. And it's basically a series that's going to lead into people buying Sweet Spot. But those are content. They're pure give, right? They're just like, here, buy the here. It isn't until like the third or fourth one that we say, hey, click here to sign up for the webinar. And that's not even trying to sell them anything. But they're seeding throughout. And the concept of seeding means you're hinting at what you do. When I work with my clients one-on-one, I often recommend they do this. In my 6 week to Natalie, I've seen you do this well. In my 6 weeks to menopause success system program, one of our people, blah, blah, blah. Or I tell people to make this, you know, follow these X steps. So that's the kind of thing that's seeding. You're not offering the program. You're kind of almost whetting their appetite for it and teasing them about it. Because some people go, well, what is this program? Like, tell me about this program. And that's where you want people to be. You want them asking you to tell you more, right? But you have to create the content to get them to that point, right? Even on enrollment conversations. And maybe we can revisit enrollment conversations on our next one, because you never get enough of enrollment conversations. Never. It's always something we can perfect. So there's different kinds of emails. So maybe one email a week you do is a send to an article or a blog post. And Rose, if you don't have a blog yet, you know, that could be an email. You're just getting started emailing people, right? You haven't, yeah, your patients, you don't email typically.
No, I have a whole bunch of people that I can email, but I have not taken advantage of that.
Okay, right. So it's a matter of getting it in the right platform to do it. Maybe something, I was used to say MailChimp, but I'm so disenamored with them. So when we talk, I'll figure out what the best may be. How many people do you have on that list? A few hundred?
I have about 4 or 5, between 400 and 600.
That's great. That's a great place to start. My first program I offered, I had 600 people on my list, and they weren't like yours targeted. They were actually moms of the kids, you know, from this kid's soccer team, or it was people I met at an event, or my family members or whatever. So that's 600. And I was still able to offer a program, and they bought it and they loved it. So it's not too small a list to start, because they already know you and love you. Mm-hmm. And they're a hot audience, not even a warm audience. They're a hot audience. Maybe some of them haven't seen you in years. And so they're a little cooler or lukewarm.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's, and you warm them up. And so for you, I think it's going to be important. When are you on my calendar for that 2 hour?
I'm thinking around the 24th.
Of this month?
Of the month, I think so.
Okay, good. So soon.
That's it, might be the 28th, but okay, yeah.
Good. So I think that we need to get you set up in an email platform. And okay, we'll talk about like the considerations. Like Allie just recently switched to Infusionsoft. You don't need Infusionsoft yet. It's expensive, right? But you might, we want to make sure you're in a position where you can easily upgrade without it costing you a lot of time and money to transition, right?
Okay.
And something that's, you know, most of them are free for under 1,000 people, so that it's always nice when you have to pay that check because you know you got over 1,000 people on your mailing list, right? Yes. And some of them are, they make it seem like it's cheap because it's free and then it's $10. And then all of a sudden, as soon as you get like 2,000 people, it's like skyrocketed and it's as much as Infusionsoft. And there's a couple like that, which is crazy. Right. So we'll figure out what the best thing to do. And then getting you started with getting your list used to you. Once a week, you send them a nice email. You don't like try to sell them anything. Right. Or you just teach them something, but you already said you have people who are saying they want the blood chem thing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So everybody you've talked to.
So you already, this is your pre-selling. That's great. Right.
Well, I'm so excited about what we're doing. It just comes out. You know, and
I think it's great. I think it's so great. You know, that 400 to 600 people can turn into a very lucrative, you know, Zoom online telemedicine type practice. And then we'll work on, you know, some group type programs, because you've done enough one-on-ones. You always have to have done enough one-on-ones in order to know what your process is, right? But if you haven't, then, but you know, with that many patients that you've worked with, you'll be good. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. You'll be good. That's going to be fun. So that a nurture, a nice give email, like get them to click, but click to a blog post is always good. Right. And then we can get you set up with a blog. It's not that hard. You're going to pay somebody $100 on Upwork or Fiverr or something like that to set you up with a blog. And then you can just start writing. It's not that hard, right?
Okay.
Rose, I've shared a link to Groove in the chat. That's got blog posts and websites. And
I forgot Groove about it.
It's now up and running, I believe. They took it off in January because it wasn't good enough. It wasn't fit for purpose, the Groove Mail part. But I think they've reactivated it. And I have access to some training in search engine optimization and creating the blog site on it, if you'd like that.
Are you going to switch to Groove for everything once they get it up and running, like including your...
I've got so many lead magnets, I'm probably not for all or everything. But for people who are just getting started and have a less complex system than me, then I think that it's what I recommend people do, because you've got a free version and the free version includes three sales funnels, a cart and all sorts of things.
Oh, so. Wow. I think that would be great. And I would help you set that up because I want to learn it, because I paid the $500 founding fee and I got like lifetime access to everything they ever do, but I'm a little nervous to go into beta on it. So I'd have to like pick a little piece and a little piece and a little piece and get, yeah.
Well, I'll share with you the training in it as well, because although Gloria, I will find out whether, so yeah, I will. So Gloria, one of my other mentors, she offers free training for people who are in ad downline within it, so to speak, because it's an affiliate team. So anybody who joins on my link gets access to her training for free.
Awesome.
But she also has a paid course in it as well.
Yeah.
And okay. It's amazing. I've learned so much over the
last. I looked at it when it came out and I'm like, okay, I did this with Webinar Jam when it came out and it was like $297 lifetime access. And everybody else is paying it every year. Like now it's $497 or whatever. And I don't use it anymore now because I use Zoom more, but It was great for many years, and it was great to, it's always great to get in on that founding thing. I figured worst case is I lose $500, right? But the best case is if I were to transfer everything over to that, I could save like $1,200 to $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
A month, right? So, but I was nervous when they said it's in beta. I was a software developer. I know what beta means. It means it doesn't work yet, and we want you, Mr. Customer, to help us fix it. And I didn't like that idea, so I didn't do it. But I may take on some of the pieces, because some of the pieces, you know, a little bit. Does that have a blog in there too?
Yep. Yeah, so they've now started the blog site as well as the websites, the membership sites. The there's a thing like Shopify. They've got a whole system like that. So you can sell physical things, or you can sell, we can set up for so I could set up for my gratitude journal and my meditation journal to be released, pay on demand as well.
Awesome. Okay, so they have a fulfillment house associated with it.
Yeah, so you've got
into it again. So click Allie's link, and if it looks good and they have a free version, get it set up so that when we meet, you know, in a couple of weeks, we'll go through and just really map out what your best first steps are. I really also always like to find out what's your first best step to get you closest to revenue production, right? Right. I want to recoup your investment as soon as you possibly can.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I thought you would. Okay, so emails that you want to send out. One would be the nurture, like that, not nurture, but more informational. Like, hey, I've got a great article for you. Once you get some of these opt-in things set up, you know, when we figure out which of your handouts are good, and you guys both have opt-ins, you go and okay, what is that opt-in that you can send them to, right? So once a week, you can even send them to that. Even though they're already on your list, what happens with that is you encourage them to share it with others. If you like this recipe guide here, what I recommend, and sometimes my PS is, please share this with at least three people that you know would benefit from having this information. And they do. And you know, I've grown my list that way. Okay. So that's a good thing to do. So you're sending them either to a blog post and or an opt-in place. The other kinds of emails you're going to send are definitely inviting them to a webinar where you're going to make an offer. Right. And those are specifically, you got to get their attention. It's the same idea. It's always the same idea. Get their attention. So I don't even remember what our subject lines are for next week's thing. I don't remember. I write so many emails, but we're basically sending out on starting Sunday for a 5-part video series. It's the same one I sent last year. We changed the name of it. We changed the tagline. The videos are exactly the same, except we took out anything that talked about it being choosing longevity as the name. And then we changed the color of the page where they're going to. So people don't say, they don't, you know, because people are very visual. Like you recognize something. Oh, I've seen that before. I don't know where, but I've seen it before. Therefore, I don't have to register for this. I've already done it. So if you change the colors and you change the name, it's rinse and repeat. And it went well last year, so I might as well do it again. And hopefully it goes better this year because it's not the beginning of the pandemic. Our launch started, I think it was the day after the first lockdowns were announced. Yeah, not fun. But we had to pivot and it did well. It did okay. Okay, so you still, if you're sending them to a webinar, you want to say, or Facebook Live even, right? This goes for Facebook Lives. So you don't have to set up a webinar. You can get on Facebook. Have you ever done a Facebook Live? Yeah. Very easy to do. You're on Facebook. You can just on your page. Do you have a business page or just a personal?
I have one of each, but I use the personal.
Yeah. And you can basically, you learn to grow both of them. So I would say you do your Facebook Live on your personal if you have more people. And then you share it to your business, right? Okay. So basically you go out there and say, hey, I'm Dr. Rose and I am, you know, a naturopathic doctor and I'm specializing in thermography. Did you know that thermography, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, it's nice if we can create a, do you have a handout that you give people that just compares?
I have a web page and I do have a comparable thing, but I haven't had to use any of that. It's finally, because I've been doing this since 2000, it's finally come to where people are looking for me. Yeah.
Right. So we'll talk, you know, we'll talk about the content of it, but basically you send them. So say you have a webinar coming up and you're doing this blood chem. I specialize in thermography and you know this, and there's a lot of stuff that shows up in blood in a thermography, and I'm seeing places. I want to see what's actually going on in their blood. So we'll run a blood chemistry, and I got this great new software that I can give you a generate this really cool report. Come to a webinar and I'll talk to you more about exactly what that is. Or if you already have it set up and you just say here, you know, it's really my inaugural pricing is just this, go there, you know, so there's a lot of ways you can do it. And we'll talk about the strategy for that offer kind of webinar, but basically you can either, so you send them to a piece of content on your blog. And like Allie did, she eventually put calls to action there. You then, a call to action meaning, you know, tell them what to do at the end and, you know, whether it's sign up for this freebie or whatever. And the goal is to build your mailing list so that when you send out emails, a lot of people are reading them and yeah, they take action. And then what was the next piece? So that kind, then that you can send them to a Facebook Live, you can send them to a webinar. And sometimes you might just send an email that asks them to reply. That's another option. I don't do it that often because with 100,000 people, if they all reply.
Yeah.
My help desk would quit. yeah. But that's a great way to do it because, hey, I've been thinking about this. It seems to be a problem for these folks. What about you? Have you ever experienced this? You know, reply and let me know. The ones that I've gotten the most responses for, and I didn't do it this year because I got caught up and didn't have time, but was on Mother's Day. I'll typically send out an email that's very heartfelt on Mother's Day. And I'll say, you know, Mother's Day, we all celebrate, but not everybody celebrates Mother's Day. So for some people, Mother's Day is very, very painful. And I talk about my story. I lost my mother 30 years ago. I talk about miscarriages. So those of you who have tried, you know, who are trying to get pregnant and can't, those of you who have lost a mother, those of you who have lost a child, Mother's Day is very painful. And I just want to, you know, honor that. And what's your, do you share if you have a story? I'd love to hear it. I'd love to. And we get so many beautiful, heart-wrenching, beautiful tearjerker kind of responses to that. People love it. And what it does is it just builds the trust factor. You're being vulnerable. They're really liking you and they get to know you, right? You're not just another person out there trying to sell them services.
I like that.
So stuff like that. And you know, you probably have a lot of thermogram stories where, you know, people have been saved from, you know, mastectomies and even death because you found something really early on. You we're going to create a composite of all your stories. One of the things I haven't done yet, but I'm planning to, is to create an index, a bunch of stories that you can tell. And you just have them and you can create an index file that has a link to all of them. And they can all be in individual Google Docs in a Google folder. And you go, okay, I want to tell a story. This is what I'm going. And you have written out your stories. And the stories are so incredible. Has anybody ever heard of Sam Horn? She wrote a book called Tung Fu. She wrote a book that said, tomorrow is not a day in the week. And it's basically about procrastination. She's written some beautiful books, Sam Horn. And so she did a talk yesterday and she's doing another one tomorrow. I can't wait for where she had us think about story, but she called it an anecdote. Like it's not just a story, it's a story that has a purpose. And then from that story, what's the aha, right? What is that message there? And then what are some questions you can ask people? Oh, have you ever had that blah, blah, blah happen to you? When you had that happen, what happened? And you ask questions to lead them through. And that's how you use a story to lead them to a you know, engaging with you, downloading something, signing up for something. And I'll look at my notes. I did an Otter transcript of that. So I'll see if I can get the Otter transcript to look decent. But it's just a, when you tell stories, when you lead with stories, she's masterful at it. Like every time I've heard her speak, she starts with a story. She tells a story. Every point she tries to make, she has another story. Some of them are longer, like a minute or two, three. Some of them are 30-second stories, but it's always illustrating the point. So if you're saying how thermograms can find, abnormalities and much, much sooner than the traditional x-rays or MRIs or mammograms or whatever, and you tell a story about how somebody, you know, Mary came in to see me. You don't say, I'm going to tell you a story about Mary. You always just go, you know, Mary came in to see me and she was, you know, she had this history and she had this little, you know, irritation, or she had whatever. And you tell the story of Mary and how you found this thing. And then that saved her from, you know, the fate of everybody else in her family who ended up having mastectomies or whatever. You have tons of them. So that's another thing to think about before we meet, is to just start to write down at least a summary kind of story. This series, watch this series that I'm putting out starting Sunday, because the series that I'm putting out, I had taken a class with Sam Horn last year, and I was watching these videos going, wow, these are really good. How did I do these so well? Why are these so good? And then when I was on with Sam yesterday on this talk, I'm like, oh, I got it from Sam, right? So every single one of my videos started with a story, had a story somewhere in between, and ended with a story or close to the end, which was, I'll tell you more about that tomorrow. I'll tell you more about that on the next video, right? And like my second one starts with, I was standing before, I didn't say anything like, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so and I'm a blah, blah, blah. It's a waste of your airwaves. You catch their attention immediately. So my video starts with, I was standing before the open door of the refrigerator. That ice cream container was calling my name. And then I had the dialogue. She said, always put dialogue in. Don't just say, I thought to myself, blah, blah, blah. Don't eat it. Your in-laws are coming Saturday. You bought it for them. Oh, but if I just have a bite. And I just had the conversation. And then I led them to the story. And guess what? I did. I went back and I took one spoonful, put the ice cream back. And then I said something like, surprised, shocked. I went back 5 minutes later and I polished off the rest of the container. And then I talked about sugar addictions and cravings and the science behind it. But that got people's attention, right? Who hasn't done that? Most people have done that, right? I'm just going to have one bite. And then you leave the spoon in there and, you know, and 3 hours later, it's completely gone. But you only ate a bite at a time. So think about all your stories, because you can use them in your emails or you can start them on the emails and you can say some kind of leading sentence that says, click here to for the rest of the story, right? Click here to see what happened next, right? And so I did stories at the beginning. I started out with a story about my sister. It was a very hard decision I had to make. And then I came back to, this is a decision I made, and this is why, and this is what happened. And then I had one where I was sitting across the table from my mother, the kitchen table from my mother, having a discussion like we'd had over and over again. And then I told about this crazy conversation we had, right? And it led perfectly into the content. So you all have stories. I didn't think I had many stories up, and they're little stories maybe, right? A conversation you had with somebody at the supermarket, right? Some interaction you had with an uncle, some advice you gave someone. I have to put my cousin's story at my sister's funeral, which was a story of you can do whatever you set your mind to do. And it's a really good story. I'm going to write that down. Because it's all these little things that you don't know. And then you can just write the stories down. And then you think about, and I'll share with you the thing I learned from her yesterday, because she had just drew a grid and it was the A's, right? The anecdote, the aha, the ask, and then the act. So there's five of those, because 70% should be your story. And then the rest of it, and then you have to connect them to why the story is important and what questions they can ask and what actions they can take. And I thought it was just a beautiful, easy to follow model that you could use in an email, you can use it in a blog, you can use it when you're speaking, you can use it on Facebook Lives. I would say that when I'm creating a presentation, sometimes I don't get to do this, but a lot of times, most of my time is not spent creating the technical content and the beautiful slides. It's crafting what my story is going to be and what story I'm going to use in what places. So I would say spend a couple of hours, sit down and just even jot down a name of the different stories. And then you can go back and fill them in later, because this is going to grow your practice like nothing else will. Does that make sense? Because then they relate to you. Then they know what action to take. It's just a phenomenal process. Okay. So we talked about sending out what to say. Okay, so the other type of emails that you're going to send out are nurture emails. So the nurture emails would be like, say somebody goes to your website and they sign up for a particular freebie, you know, a video, a handout. Mihaela has a whatever that little document is on drug interactions. Allie has like dozens of them. They sign up. What do you do after they sign up? Well, you have to send them what they signed up for, obviously. But that's where a lot of us fall short. You send them what they sign up for, and then you wait until you send them an offer, you know, whatever, a month, 2-3 months later, and you put them on your newsletter list. But if you instead you nurture them through a series of how you want them to interact with you, who you are, what to expect, what kind of benefits you can provide them. And you just little by little through it. And maybe after the fifth one or on the fifth one, you offer them, you know, I'd really love to get to know you better. And let's hop on a call. Right. And then you have a conversation. Do you have questions about thermography? Do you have questions about your menopause symptoms? Do you have questions about the drugs you're doing? Let's hop on a 15-minute call and see if there's some way I can help you with it. Right. So those are nurture emails. And those are really important. There's a whole training in the library on nurture emails. I don't know if it's named. I have to go back through and rename them, because some of them I had slides and there's a name for it because our tech person went and pulled the name off the slides, and some of them don't. And then, you know, there's no name on them. So I have to go back through. But there's one on nurture sequences and the emails and how to write them and what they should be and how many and all that. So that's a good thing. So nurture. And then somebody I studied with a long time ago, Ryan Dice, brilliant guy. He's very big in internet marketing. So he doesn't have the lovey-dovey nurture kind of stuff that we do, but he calls the difference between indoctrination and nurture. Nurture is something you just take people through, and indoctrination might be, who am I and what do I do? And, you know, some of that more technical stuff. So either way, it's the series that they go through then. But then there's the follow-up nurture. After they've signed up for a webinar, you've offered the webinar and now you have a sale. So it's a sales sequence of emails, right? So you're on the webinar and a bunch of people sign up and they say, oh yes, Rose, I want to do your blood chemistry. And oh yes, Mihaela, I want to do this drug nutrient interaction thing. And they buy it. And that's good. And then you have whatever series of emails that is to deliver what you offered them. But then there's the other people who didn't buy it on the webinar. And some of them are sitting on the fence. They really wanted to, they weren't sure, they wanted to, they weren't sure. And that would be the emails. That's the sales sequence of emails where you say, hey, you know, I just did a webinar yesterday. It was awesome. People loved it. If you're giving a replay, say, here's the link to the replay. And I just want to let you know that I offered this amazing opportunity to do this, this, and this with me. And for the limited time until next Friday or Thursday or Wednesday or whatever, it's only this much money. And I would love for you to check it out here, and that you click them to the sales page. So you have a series of those. They're not all going to be direct like that. Like I have a whole way I do it for various products, right? Where I'll send them out and then I send them a little information. I have a what if email, right? And the what if email is let's play the game. What if, right? What if you say yes to this opportunity, right? You say yes to this program. And as a result of what you learned, you help somebody save their life. That's when I talk to practitioners. You have the information that you can offer somebody that's going to save their life, right? Now, what if I don't do this and I don't have that? What happens to that person, right? I do the what if my mother's doctors knew what I know and had taught her how to balance her blood sugar, how to do an advanced cardio panel, had evaluated, would she still be alive today? I kind of think she would. She wouldn't be that old. She would be in her, 65? She'd be 86. It's not old, right?
No, it's not.
So, right, she would be if her doctors had told her what I was telling her and she actually listened, if she had gotten the right testing, would she still be here? I believe she did. If I had not done this, you know, if I didn't know what I knew, if you could save the life of one person with this, or you can change and improve the life of one person, how would that be? And what if, you know, with thermography, it kind of things like, you know, what if you found like the early beginnings of a tumor and you're able to change your lifestyle and enhance your nutrition and do all these things to prevent that from happening? What if you discovered that these two drugs that you're taking are causing an interaction that could be fatal, right? And you find out about that and you stop doing it, right? What if you don't do that? What if you keep taking them? What if they deplete your zinc so much and your CoQ10 so much that you create a problem that's serious, you know? And what if you didn't do this program and you continue to have hot flashes and be miserable? What is going to happen to your relationship? Right? Anything you can think of. I'm just throwing these out there, but though I love the what ifs and I love putting those in a sales sequence. What if you don't do it? Like the cost of inaction is what they call it in marketing. What if you don't do this? What if you do it? What if you don't? Right? Is it worth the $500 you're going to spend on this XYZ whatever, or 300 or whatever it might be? You know, I tell a story in my insulin resistance closing. And I say, if you're sitting on the fence, you're still watching, this is a video I do at the very end. And that's in my sales sequence. At the very end, I'll go, if you're still watching, you're interested, right? You haven't discounted this because you wouldn't be watching this video if you weren't interested in this. And you're probably on the fence and you're not sure. I remember a time, I totally get it. I remember a time when I was on the fence and it was a $5,000 program. And I was like, oh, it's a lot of money. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Should I do it? Should I not do it? I decided to do it. And let me tell you that $5,000 program has netted me probably $300,000. And here's how. And then I tell them the people I met, the process I went through, what I learned. I mean, it's probably made me way more than that because it was how to sell from stage. Like that's priceless, right? So I talk about that. Like, you know, right now it may seem like a lot of money, but what the value it can have for you is priceless. And so it's really thinking about your stuff in that terms. And it takes sitting down and it takes having focus and it takes thinking about what happens if they do, what are all those wonderful things? What happens if they don't, right? Project it out a year, 2 years, 5 years, okay? So that's what I have for you on emails. Questions, comments. Was this helpful?
Fantastic.
Very much.
As always.
Very much.
Thank you so much for sharing your amazing knowledge and skills.
You're welcome. Now put it to use.
Yes.
Right? Put it to use. You'll have recordings of these get posted within a few days. They'll be on the site. You know, you can listen again. If you want to get a transcript of it, listen to it, play Otter, get an Otter app on your phone. Do you remember me talking about that? You guys have heard me and you both have it. And Allie already did. She can. So
it's it?
OTTER.
Thank you.
Otter. And you can get it as an app on your phone. And you just basically turn it on and you just record whatever is in presence, whether it's in the room or on the computer spewing out, and it will transcribe it as you go. It's not the best transcription. Sometimes there's stuff you don't understand, but the cool part is it's also recording it. So if you're going, what does blue alligator mean? I don't remember hearing blue alligator. You press on that and it basically will play the recording at that point. And you go, oh, it wasn't blue alligator. It was, I don't even know what it could have been, whatever, right? And it helps you a lot. So it's really good. It's like free for the first 600 minutes or 500 minutes or something a month, which is like, you know, unless you're recording things professionally, you know, it's, you're not going to hit it.
I usually hit it from just my calls with you, Rita Marie.
Do you?
But that's only because you spend your whole time spouting gems of brilliance. So I hang on every word.
Thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad. And if you do hit it for $10 a month, you get 6,000.
So I've never needed to do that. So
yeah. I've reached the 6,000, but that was because I had set it up to record my Zoom calls to transcribe them automatically after they were done. And it just was like too much because it was like my whole account and every team call. And like, I don't need my team calls transcribed. I just wanted, but you couldn't select. So I stopped that. Yeah. Yeah. But I hit 6,000 a couple of times because of that.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you. You got to go to bed.
Yeah. I put otter.ai in the text chat.
There you go.
I saw that. Thank you.
And it works on your computer as well as on your phone.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Right. It works on whatever platform you're on. So it's really awesome. Good stuff. Okay.
I'm to bed. Night.
Have a great one. Go to bed. Bye-bye. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good night.